Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Your guest today, Daniela Jensen. Daniela, it's great to have you on. I appreciate you being here. And can you tell us, first of all, where you're calling in from and what you do for a living with Big Picture Foods?
Yeah, exactly. I am the founder and CEO of Big Picture. We are headquartered in Barrington, Rhode Island.
Oh, that's awesome. And tell me a little bit more about your background. What got you interested in working in this kind of space? And what did you kind of notice out there on the market with maybe similar products that you were looking to do a little bit differently or better with this brand?
Yeah, there was a huge white space opportunity for us. We are a regenerative organic certified clean ingredient brand that has a variety of different Mediterranean focused foods. Think olives, peppers, capers. And if you picture that aisle in the grocery store, right? Everything is jarred, super conventional, highly overprocessed. And there's a few main players, but outside of that really hasn't had much innovation. I watched the documentary called Kiss the Ground. Have you heard of it?
I've not, actually, surprisingly. Okay. Yeah.
It's on Netflix. If any of the listeners are interested in learning about climate change, regenerative agriculture, nutrient density, this is the one to watch. I stumbled upon it and it was like hook, line, and sinker, truly life-changing for me. It talks about the health of the soil and there were so many aha moments. As the, you know, I'm a mom and the person who does the majority of our grocery shopping for our family is me, and I feel a responsibility to bring quality foods and put them on the table. And some of the stats that I had learned about the way that our food was grown and being processed just rattled me. So one of them, and I will never forget this, is you have to eat 8 oranges today to get the same vitamins and minerals that our grandparents got from one. And so think about this. Here I am trying to fill my cart with fruits and vegetables and good things to feed my family, but the fruits and vegetables no longer nourish us the way that they used to. So there was this, you know, breadcrumb moment where I started connecting all of these dots when we look at the health crisis in our country and you think about the quality of foods. And anyway, it was very solvable. And it was the first documentary that I had heard of that took climate and a myriad of different problems that we're facing and made it really easy. And the answer's right under our feet. And that inspired me to explore and pursue regenerative agriculture. And there is so much happening in that space right now. I knew that, you know, this trend was coming and really wanted to be part of it. And it was the perfect storm. I have a fantastic team. You know, my husband, Chris, is involved in the business. We have a business partner, Sotiris Kitrilakis, that helped deeply with sourcing. And, you know, there's a fantastic story, but we have a vertically integrated supply chain. We work direct with our farmers. Our products go from field to fermentation barrels in hours. And what most people don't know is that this category, if you think about Mediterranean foods, everyone thinks like there's all of these shows on TV right now about living to 100 and the Mediterranean diet. And, you know, that's the old world way of growing and curing foods. And if you go to the grocery store and you look at the products on shelf, that's not what is being sold to consumers today. And so there was a great opportunity to rewrite the script and take a step backwards so that we could move this industry forward. And so I'm, you know, elated to be part of the solution, but give people choices.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And why is that? That statistic you mentioned about the orange, I mean, so what's kind of the impetus behind like why that has happened over not that long of a period, seemingly?
Yeah, so it's twofold, right? One is the soil. If you plant the same crop year over year over year in the same plot of land, you have to have nutrients in the soil in order to have nutrients in your food. And we're depleting the soil. So not only is it by not rotating crops, but it's also sprays and, you know, conventional chemical fertilizers and herbicides and pesticides and all the things that we're doing to the soil. We're tilling the soil. We're not leaving living roots. We're the way that agriculture is today, we don't think about soil health versus, you know, when our grandparents were farming, people composted and, you know, you took a very traditional approach. That's part of it. And then the second part is how our foods are cured today. And if you think about olives, right, the traditional way of curing olives was just salt, whether that was dry rubbed or it was in a saltwater brine. And most olives, like I'm talking 99.9% of olives sold today are chemically accelerated, especially if you're a green olive. So they use lye. Lye is a caustic soda. It's the active ingredient in things like Drano. I don't want my foods that I'm eating sitting in lye and then being rinsed. And none of that is, you know, there's not a reason for it other than it's faster and cheaper.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. So you think when you talk about regenerative agriculture, you're kind of doing things a little bit differently insofar as you are kind of doing that rotation of crops, not trying to not deplete the soil. Was that kind of the first like kind of venture for you in creating a brand like this, was actually like, you know, finding places that did that? Or is that something that you actually undertook on your own as far as the operations go? Or did you, were you just kind of seeking partners that were already kind of doing things this way?
We have a great mentor, Sotiris, who has been in this space for a very long time with deep sourcing contacts. And we took the pandemic, the pause, which was a blessing in disguise for our business model, really, to organize the supply chain, to identify and find the farmers that were willing to grow exclusively traditional, you know, regenerative, organic, and to cure the old world way, and to be able to do that at national scale. So oftentimes with fermentation, you'll find small craft, you know, regional brands, but they don't have the capacity to be able to service a Costco or a Whole Foods, et cetera. So that was really important in making sure that we could build something that had legs to scale.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And so you're basically looking for people who are already kind of doing things this very sustainable way that you talk about, or, you know, finding folks who are willing to maybe make a change and do things the way that you were looking to have them done, essentially. No. That's amazing. And I suppose I know you mentioned, you know, scaling to be able to support something like a major chain, like a Whole Foods or a Sprouts or anything like that. I guess when you got started with this brand, was that kind of your thought process, was like you wanted to have, be able to have the capacity to support being in those types of stores? Or did you start doing more of kind of like a direct to consumer model? What was kind of at the beginning, you know, more of like your, I guess, go to market strategy, where you were looking to sell these products?
Yeah. So we're focused on the natural channel, obviously that better for you consumer. This was the ideal opportunity. And we have two lines. We have a refrigerated fresh line that's available in trays, and we have a jar line that's for center store. And we launched specifically with the refrigerated fresh line, thinking that more and more consumers are shopping the perimeter, right? They walk in, they hit produce, they round the back of the store, they hit up dairy and bakery, and then they're typically exiting. We wanted to be able to service their needs with a clean ingredient, you know, superior offering. And it was somewhat of a challenge because most people were going to the center store to buy or look for olive. If you walked into a grocery store and you asked 10 people, 9 of them would go to the jars to buy their
olive. I'm thinking about mine right now that I go to. That's exactly where it is. It's right in the middle on a shelf, 1,000 other jarred things. Exactly.
Yeah. Right. So we had a unique challenge there because the product is probiotic rich and never heated, not depleted. We really led with the nutrient value. We needed to retrain a customer for where to find it. And that became our biggest challenge at launch. And so as a small emerging brand, you're not ready for the Whole Foods and Sprouts of the world, right? You're trying to find your way in the 2-store chains, the 5 locations, and each one of those has a different planogram, a different set, a different, you know, sometimes we were being set with specialty cheese. Sometimes we were with the fermented products. Sometimes we were in the deli set, which again, made it really hard for consumers to know where to find you. So it was a unique challenge. And I think being able to bridge that gap, and we were persistent with it. I think that's the best advice that I can give to other founders, is have a vision and then really be persistent. Don't let buyers tell you, like, you know where your product is going to do well. So use that and try to inform.
Yeah, obviously these like kind of novel products, or like even maybe more traditional products, like what you're doing, we just have novel processes that can't necessarily exist next to where they are traditionally found in the grocery store. Working with those smaller chains, did you kind of see that as an opportunity to like, obviously you kind of test out like where it's performing best and which parts of stores as well? What did you kind of find through those experiences? I mean, where exactly, I guess, like, you know, when you talk to, you know, the wholesale partners that you work with, or the retail partners that you work with now, what do you kind of go and say, like, as far as a proof of concept goes, or what you found that has worked the best, where does that kind of exist in the grocery store right now?
So data is your best friend. And I think using and leveraging that to tell a cohesive story to buyers is really important. So, you know, when we launched, it was, okay, let's start in these smaller chains. We had a bunch of assumptions. We believed that that refrigerated fresh customer would look for it. So we had to test and learn. And it's really smart to do that on the smaller scale. Then once we had proof of concept, if you will, we were able to take that data and tell a very compelling story to the 20 store chains and begin to work your way up.
Yeah. So as you've learned all these from working with these smaller chains and even like mid-sized chains, 10 to 20 doors, where do you kind of find like a home for these types of products? I suppose you take one in particular, since we've been talking about olives, I think just coincidentally, where do you kind of find that it performs best? Or is it really just more of a consistency thing more than it is a specific placement thing, you think, for these products, just so people know where to go to find them?
It really depends on the retailer. So if the retailer has a very strong cheese set, like a Bristol Farms, for example, they're a key specialty, you know, they skew more gourmet. I think it's probably understanding who the customer base is and aligning the products there, versus in Jimbo's, for instance, we're placed in the plant-based vegetarian set because that's a really highly trafficked part of their store. So there's not a one-size-fits-all answer to that, unfortunately.
No, it's fair enough. I mean, I think that's actually the most important perspective. I mean, I think everybody's always looking for a kind of a silver bullet, whether it's selling through wholesale and retail or whether you're selling direct to consumer online. I mean, doesn't really exist. I mean, there's so much nuance in selling CPG and people's, you know, taste preferences and dietary restrictions and things like that. So I definitely see that. I think if there is any advice to come out of thinking about placing on store shelves, I think that's exactly it. It's just, it's highly variable. It's a case by case basis, depending on, you know, what the store is and who their customer base is. So, which can obviously be a challenge in its own right, especially when you get into those larger stores, because the customer base is so much more wide ranging. So I suppose as you look here to 2024, how many doors are you in across right now? Have you been able to penetrate into any of those like really larger chains that we kind of mentioned earlier, whether it's like a Whole Foods or Sprouts or any of those?
Yeah, we are nationwide at Sprouts.
Awesome.
With our center store yard line, and we are in dual placements. So we have specialty placements on the West Coast in Whole Foods, and the jars are launching nationwide in June.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I guess obviously with something like this that has such a novel process, I think one, people would probably be interested in to hear like why you're like, how, you know, the process that you're working with to produce these are different, but also in order for it to stand out, I assume there's some level of, you know, consumer education that goes into, you know, marketing a product like this. How do you kind of take to that side of things that's so important with the very novel process that you're working with?
Yeah, grown right and cured clean is our ethos at Big Picture. What does grown right mean, right? It's regenerative organic certified, and then cured clean, we're using only natural fermentation. We use water, salt, and a splash of organic kosher wine vinegar. That's it. And more consumers today are looking at ingredient labels. And I truly applaud that and trying to understand why is there a need for all of these acids and oils and stabilizers in the product? So for us, securing placements came down to showing the buyer what they had on shelf and then showing the buyer what we were offering. And it truly is a night and day difference. You know, we are the furthest from a Me Too product. So I think that was really important. And then getting them to taste the difference. Most buyers will do cuttings when they are evaluating the category, and they will compare a bunch of different brands or products together and then choose what they feel best represents their customers' desires. And we shine there. I mean, if these aren't the best tasting olives, peppers, and capers, you know, certainly shoot me an email and let me know your thoughts. But that's, you buy food because it tastes better. And for us, that's a way to tell the consumer our story. So whether it be at demos or tastings, samplings, et cetera, it's like, hey, taste the difference. And then they're blown away. They're like, oh my God, this is the best olive I've ever had. Why does this taste so good? And it opens the door for that grown right, cured clean message.
You know, it's amazing. And obviously, you know, thinking about, you know, kind of being omni-channel in 2024, I think is super important as well. Do you have a direct-to-consumer side of the business? And if you do, was that something you kind of started out with or something you kind of adopted later on? And what, I guess, size or like proportion of the business are you doing on that, any online channels that you sell through as well?
Yeah, so online was never our strategy. We launched in retail to kind of box out and build the brand there. And then when we think about omnichannel, it's not necessarily direct to consumer. Yes, we have a website, we work Shopify, you know, we're selling on Shopify, but because the product is refrigerated fresh and the price points are $5.99, you know, in order to build a bundle and who's really buying 10 different, if we had, you know, a charcuterie board in a box or something like that, I could see that really being successful online. But for us, we were like, we want to be in grocery stores first and foremost. And then when we consider omnichannel, it's food service. It's all of the alternate, you know, whether that's, we have a fantastic partnership with Sweetgreen. We sell to them our banana peppers in their Italian chopped salad, or, you know, the variety of hospitals and college cafeterias. And, you know, I think that there's so much space for clean ingredient product that that's where we're putting our focus and not so much on the D2C side of things. That said, you know, certainly Amazon is a beast and that's driving, you know, using shopper marketing, that's driving our retail sales as well.
I think it definitely makes sense. And I guess just for like one other vertical, obviously, have you been approached with any kind of like, you know, private labeling or white labeling opportunities with such a novel process, such a unique brand? I've never seen, you know, I don't think any other products out there. I also probably don't look maybe as much as maybe some other people, but it seems like you have a pretty novel and unique process here that is obviously, you know, makes a huge difference in taste and, you know, nutritional content. So has anybody approached you with, you know, an opportunity to kind of put their own label on or do collaborations? And do you entertain kind of ideas like that? Or are you really trying to keep this, you know, to your own brand for now?
Absolutely. We have a good, better, best strategy. Good being non-GMO, better being organic, best being regenerative organic certified, the same curing natural fermentation processes, obviously never chemically accelerated. And we do private label right now. I can't say for whom, but we also do it in adjacent categories. So for instance, we have a regenerative organic extra virgin olive oil. Perfect example for, you know, stretching that product portfolio a little bit.
No, it's really fascinating. It's always a really interesting conversation I find with these kind of very novel products, their perspectives on, you know, private labeling. Because one, it obviously opens yourself up to kind of creating your own competition, even though you're profiting off of that. So, but I found a lot of folks really, especially really early on in their journey, I think can be a little averse to those types of opportunities from just this is my baby. I made this like 3 years ago. I can't be just like giving this out to anybody. So I'm always really interested in hearing people's perspectives on that. So I appreciate that. And Danielle, I know I mentioned right before we started the call here today, one question I always love to ask on the podcast, which is basically, you know, if you can go back to like when you were pre-launch, like just getting ready to, you know, go to market with this for the first time, if you could give yourself any one piece of advice, if you were to start this business again, what do you think that piece of advice would be?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think that I would tell myself to go where the data tells you to go and not necessarily. Like sometimes founders can get their minds made up about something and not stay open to different ideas. And I'll bring that full circle to big picture. I was hellbent on this being a refrigerated fresh product. Like we wanted to service the perimeter. We wanted to keep this raw probiotic because there were so many benefits that came to that. And we knew all along that we could put the product in jars and we could bring innovation to the center store. The way that we do that is because it is cured so thoroughly and completely using natural fermentation, we're able to use a lower temperature heat for a shorter duration of time. So it's like a gentle pasteurization. So think about like mushy red peppers, right? They're almost spreadable and taste big pictures, jarred red peppers, and you get that fresh garden crunch that's still in them. And that's because of the low heat. So I was very reluctant to go into jars and I'm very grateful that we did. And we tried to explore it, you know, dip our toes in the water and see where the data takes us, because it has been fantastic to be able to play in both categories. And it's really significantly scaled our business. But if I had just stayed focused on what maybe my initial assumption was, we would have missed out on that opportunity.
I think it's such good advice. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs definitely can fall into that kind of same category. I mean, what it takes to go and start a business and get it off the ground, I mean, you have to have serious conviction. And with that comes a lot of like really big ideas that worked out. And when new, like, you know, tough decisions come along, no, you trusted your intuition so many times before, even though the data might be telling you something else, you might be inclined to feel like, no, I'm just sticking with what like my like impetus for this was. I know that they can always be obviously like a difficult mental, you know, battle within yourself. But at the end of the day, you know, once you get out there into the market, you know, what customers want is more important than like what you want the brand to be. And, you know, where customers can find and how they can really enjoy, you know, what you're selling and is obviously, you know, a big part of what makes the business successful, not just your own decisions, but the customer's decisions as well. So I think that's really interesting. And although it is, I think, really important to kind of have, you know, conviction in certain things like high level things. So like your mission, for example, like the way that you're doing things, obviously you're never going to change that under any circumstances. The fact that you are at best level of your good, better, best. I love the way you explain that. I think a lot of folks can fall into that trap of kind of like shoehorning the original idea into a market where like that's maturing and it like no longer makes sense. So I think it's a really important perspective. And a lot of people listen to the podcast or other entrepreneurs kind of in the CPG space. And I think it's really important thing to understand from somebody who has had success in this space. So I really appreciate you sharing that. And Danielle, I just want to give you an opportunity really quickly to just be able to shout out your website, any social medias people should know about, anybody maybe interested in trying the product, but also maybe reaching reaching out for a potential business partnership with you or anything like that, what's the best way to stay in touch with you all?
Hello@bigpicturefoods.com. You'll come right into my inbox. Don't hesitate to reach out if I can ever be of support. We are on Instagram, Big Picture Foods. And if any of this sounds interesting, give Kiss the Ground a watch and find
on Netflix, you said, right?
Sprouts. Yep, on Netflix.
Cool. That's amazing. Yeah. Danielle, I just want to say thank you again for coming on. And I just want to wish you the best of luck and continued success in everything you're doing. I think what you're doing is really important. You're doing this kind of education, but also just providing, you know, foods the old world way that we've kind of, you know, gotten so far away from these days. And I think it's really, really important. So I just want to say thank you again for coming on. And I really look forward to staying in touch as well.
Thanks so much, Matt.
Thanks, Danielle. Thanks, everybody.